Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Disaster at the Den for Norwich City, not the start to the season that Philippe Clement or anyone associated with the Canaries wanted. A 3-0 defeat against Millwall at the Den, and plenty of shock and plenty to discuss after that performance and result. Welcome to the latest edition of the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast. We've just made the journey back from the Den, and one upside, and maybe the only upside of today, is that an early game means an earlier return, which means we can record a podcast straight off the back of it, and probably quite rightly too, after the events that unfolded. I'm your host, Connor Southall, joined by Paddy Davitt and Adam Harvey. Let's dive straight in, Paddy, two-footed. What on earth went on today?
Well, you say two-footed. There wasn't a lot of aggression shown by that Norwich collective. We'll get into the weeds of the performance, but to see that from a Clement side, we've not seen that. I mean, the man himself said probably Birmingham first half, but we're talking his opening day when he barely got to know his players' names back in November of 2025. So from that point to this, there's been nothing as weak, limp, in terms of the physicality required. He talked about you go to Millwall, you need to win your duels, you need to win your second balls. There was none of that collectively, individually. Just got ran over the top of, and metaphorically, and it almost, for me, that's shock to see that from a Clement side, because we haven't seen it. You know, we saw plenty of that with his predecessor, sadly, as the start of that season sort of dissolved into rancour and recrimination getting on for 12 months ago, but not under Clement, not on his watch. And, you know, that poses a few troubling questions, most of all for the man himself and his coaching staff, that group of players can throw that type of performance in. And of course, the flip side, and we have to acknowledge it, and we might as well do it straight off, Millwall, excellent. Alex Neil, there's no hangover there on the evidence, what we saw there at the Den today, from, you know, going so close, a point off promotion, automatic, then losing to Hull in disappointing fashion, I think, over two legs in the playoffs. But they've recruited well again, it looks like, over the summer, and they're going to be on that level of performance there or thereabouts again. And they were very good. But Norwich were so compliant and so weak, really. And it's worrying. It's worrying. Two games into the season, and we don't want to get carried away any more than we did after when we were sat here 7 days ago discussing West Brom. And there was a lot of mitigation there, and that rumbled on all through last week, and, you know, culminating in Clement and his pieces of paper and listing the United Nations in his defence of VAR. I mean, there was mitigation. There isn't any today for that. Display is probably giving it too much credence. It was just a surrender, really. And, you know, okay, we don't want to get too carried away. But equally, off the back of West Brom, that's now two very unconvincing championship performances. And in very quick order, it's got to turn and turn and turn very quickly. And they've got, obviously, an opportunity now in the cup against Cardiff. I said to him post-match, does what you've seen this afternoon alter your thoughts for Cardiff? And he was honest enough to say yes. Maybe the idea he had in terms of the personnel who were going to be on duty on Tuesday at Cardiff, that isn't going to be the case now. Now, whether that means is players will have to go and prove themselves again, or maybe it means others are going to get an opportunity a little bit earlier than you may have thought that would be the case. But something has to change, and the sooner the better, because, you know, beyond Cardiff, it's Burnley, it's Stoke, it's Sheffield United. None of those are going to be anything other than as difficult to get a result from as Sheffield United proved today. So keep saying we don't want to go over the top, but equally, you know, this time last season, a tone was set and we know where that ran to, and it wasn't a nice place for anybody connected with Norwich. And I'm not saying there's a parallel here, but I'm saying if you get off on the wrong foot, it's very difficult to arrest that downward element, and it wouldn't. I don't think it would be anywhere near as marked or as troubling as it was under Clement's predecessor. But equally, in a season that again we've gone into badged as this is a group of players and a club who are targeting the top six, the top eight, that today, forget it, because that won't get you anywhere near the top six or top eight. And you know, and I'll just go back to what I said. For me, you can treat a game like that in isolation, and Millwall, weren't they so good, and Norwich were in the key areas, were not so good. But I think the troubling element is that non-performance we haven't seen under Clement. And that is a worry, that even under Clement, that group of players can serve up that, because that's nowhere near good enough. And, you know, it did evoke some troubling memories of what the first 2, 3, 4 months of last season were all about. And I don't think we want to go back there in double quick time, that is for sure.
No, and it's particularly pertinent, I think, when you mentioned last season, absolutely, in terms of the start that they made, but also how this season has been built, when it is so tough and there's so many competitive teams in there with really big ambitions, as Norwich City have. You can ill afford a start like the one that they've had. You can lose games, I think, in isolation, as last week happens, and you referenced that. But yeah, it was more the nature of how it unfolded today. And I think Paddy used the word, Adam, that I probably associate most with, which is shock. I didn't think Norwich City had a performance as being kind for what it was, but I didn't think they had that in them anymore. It did hark back to pre-Clement days, and when you think of what Philippe Clement Norwich City has been about, it's been about structure, it's been about organisation, it's been about discipline, and it's been about fight as well. Those have been kind of the fundamentals that, even in defeat, and they lost games towards the back end of last season as well, that has always been there. The concern is today, you know, speaking to Ben Crezene post-game, he said we were outworked. Philippe Clement used the word bullied, I think. Just did not feel very characteristic of that Norwich team in the very best moment that we saw towards the back end of last season.
Yeah, especially when you consider it was just over 4 months ago. They went there, applied themselves in a manner that they managed to overcome an Alex Neil Millwall side that was banging form. I think they'd just gone to Middlesbrough, and there was kind of an optimism around that place that was going to be the game. They were going to get another win and almost try and steamroll their way into the top two. And Norwich went there, done a professional job on them, and all those elements they missed today in terms of that fight, that aggression that you need within the first 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes at the Den because of the hostility of the place and also the difficult nature of it. Yeah, Norwich didn't have any of it, and you just kind of got the sense that they were not up to the task. Millwall were bang up for it, and you've got to admit that. But my wider concern is, you know, I think there was a little bit of concern maybe from the Millwall end, because they had quite a few key players missing as well today. Femi Aziz was not playing, who's arguably the best player. Ivanovic as well was always a threat up front. Tristan Kramer is one of the best defenders as well, and the fact that they could still pull that sort of performance out of the bag, and you know, you contrast that to Norwich, I know they're still missing a few key personnel, but there's enough there that know what it takes to hopefully try and get themselves towards the right end of the table this season, particularly off the back of what they done last campaign under Philippe Clement. That does lead to some concern, because I don't think we haven't seen a performance like that underneath him, apart from, yeah, maybe the early elements of that Birmingham game as you referenced, but there was a lot of factors to come into that in terms of the fact they'd only been in the building 48 hours, and Norwich had a big injury crisis at the time. It was a squad low on confidence. That really shouldn't be the case off the fact of what they'd done last season, but also a full pre-season under his watch as well. So, yeah, obviously it's a difficult environment, but yeah, Norwich were not the races today and deservedly got, well, probably could have been worse scoreline, to be honest.
Yeah, agreed. I think maybe it even flattered them in the end, to be honest, the chances that Millwall had across that encounter. And I think Paddy and Adam referenced it there. What is so kind of head-scratching about it is that they went there a few months ago, and it was a performance, as Adam referenced, that was probably their best in terms of in the league, the way that they played that day, the circumstances. It is a tough place to go, of course. Most places in the Championship are, but it does have an added edge to it. It is tougher for all the components said, kind of all the off-pitch elements, absolutely, but also the way Millwall play. They're intense. They want to run over you. That's kind of their game plan and has been for a long period of time. That's their identity. That's what they pride themselves on. And it is always about how you navigate that, particularly in the opening period of the game. And Norwich just could not get a foothold from the opening minute. So it's kind of referenced what Crezene said and what Clement said. What do you feel went so wrong from the start of that game that just they just couldn't recover based on, again, the fact that they kind of showed the perfect blueprint of going there and winning in really impressive fashion only a few months ago with a lot of the same players as well?
Well, you can kind of get an insight from the Millwall end, because after the two managers had come through for their post-match, Millwall actually brought a player through. It was the big tall defender, Taylor, I think his name is. And the way he was talking, which flows into how on the front foot they were in that first opening 15, 20 minutes, Alex Neil had clearly felt, well, we allowed Norwich to dictate that game on Easter Monday, even though they did get their noses in front early in the second half. But even in the first half, if you recall, Norwich were in control and pinned Millwall back and a lot of good territory as well as possession. And evidently, by the nature of the ferocity that Millwall set about them, that wasn't going to happen today. And that they almost knew if you take your foot off Norwich, they have good enough players that they will be able to dictate. And Clement said that. He said you need, as well as winning your duels and second balls, you need to be brave on the ball. You need to be better on the ball. And, you know, how many passing motions did we see from that Norwich team in the first half today? Very few. And when they did put one or two together, I mean, I've watched the highlights back in the car driving back. That's an excellent chance for Andre Brooks, which he just slices at. No need. He's in plenty of space, just 16 yards or so right-hand side of the box. And that's at 1-0. And, of course, that goes in. Then, you know, it punctures a bit of the belief around the stadium as much as the players. And maybe Norwich equally get a little bit of self-belief and on they go. So that's a big moment as well. And then that came after the end of one of the very rare moments they were brave enough to get on the ball and work their way through the thirds. But I think it just felt like they were frazzled from the minute off. And I'm not singling out any individual players, but in the fullback areas, you know, it was like they wanted to get the ball down and play through, and that wasn't the opportunity to do that today. They were straight on them, forcing them to, you know, make mistakes, put the ball out, recycle it, and not Millwall get territorial advantage. And the two centre-backs, Darling and Cordoba, they were better than Coburn and Ivanovic on Easter Monday. Today, that Coburn has gave those two an absolute doing. And the fact that both of them finished the first half on yellow cards ultimately proved very decisive in terms of Cordoba then gets a second yellow. But they just couldn't handle him. And you look at him and he's a big, powerful lad. But, I mean, there were times where he was just ragdolling Cordoba and then he was running away from Darling. And you think, how is that happening? Where is the intensity from those Norwich players to fight fire with fire in that regard? And, yeah, I mean, I'll just go back to Clement's quotes today. He's calling that a wake-up call and more or less inferred that maybe there's one or two inside and outside the camp who've started to believe the hype and thought that Norwich are set fair for this promotion procession to the top eight, top six, maybe even better. Not a bit of it. If you don't, as he said, go back to the basics and remember what were the elements that turned them around from staring League One in the abyss to the cusp of the playoffs last season, you can't short-circuit the process. You can't just think, well, we don't need to do that now. We don't need to do the hard stuff, the maybe the uncomfortable elements of a game, and we'll just play and we'll just show how good we are on the ball. You don't do that in a championship full stop. You certainly don't do that when you go to Millwall, when they're going to be in your face and a ferocious intent in that stadium from a club who clearly are on the up and feel that you missed out just and they can go one better this time around. So, yeah. You have to question the mentality, really, for me, individually, collectively. If Norwich didn't know what was coming today, then that's a sad indictment on that group of players and the people who should be preparing them. So, you know, I don't think there's one thing, but ultimately, they didn't start the game right. They were on the back foot and the tone was set and they couldn't claw themselves, as they have done for certain games, second part of last season, that even when they wasn't quite at it, they could find a way through and navigate a way through. And that again, is a surprising element today. You know, Clement's selections in terms of from the starting lineup, you'd question them, and it's not hindsight, but Pella Mattsson out, Sam Field in, he said after the game, you know, with hindsight, that was the wrong call. They went with Field because they thought they'd need a physical approach, particularly to deal with Millwall at set pieces. Field played in that Easter Monday game, didn't work. Then why he didn't make changes at half time? He said that group was so far off what he knows they're capable of, he wanted to give them an opportunity to go again, and right or wrong, as it were. Well, it wasn't happening, clearly. And you had three substitutes ready to come on, and Millwall in that phase of play going and double their lead. His in-game work just wasn't the Clermont we know. So it's collectively a very bad day at the office, but to be that far off it, it is worrying, absolutely worrying, because you cannot be quite at it and still feel they're in the game. I'd agree with Alex Neil. From minute one to minute 90 plus, there was only one team in that game, and that isn't acceptable for this group of Norwich players and what the ambitions are this season.
Yeah, dominant, wasn't it? In every single department, dominant. And you look from 1 to 11 across that pitch, and I think in every single area, to a man, Millwall were far superior to their Norwich counterpart. And it is a concern when you've got Clermont speaking in those terms. You've got Ben Crezene speaking in the terms that he was speaking post-game about being overworked. And look, this is a division, and we've said it multiple times. You begin to think you've cracked it, and has a nasty way of catching you on the chin and reminding you that that isn't the case. But as Paddy referenced, Adam, I think it did all stem from, you know, between the ears, so to speak, didn't it? What was upstairs or what wasn't upstairs in this occasion? Because as soon as, particularly in an atmosphere and in a ground and against a team like Millwall, if those fundamentals aren't there, if those basics aren't there, those battling qualities, that want to win second balls, the duels aspect, then you are going to find yourself swimming against the tide pretty quickly. And those are the aspects that, and this is why I feel such a big shock about it, that almost felt like they were a given under Philippe Clermont, that weren't there today. That intensity, and that ultimately led to them being stretched, being disconnected, spaces opening up, Millwall getting in behind, getting round, getting through. The chances that they created today, in terms of the expected goals and in terms of the quality on the eye test of the chances that they created. This wasn't a Norwich team that really gave that much up, certainly towards the back end of last season. And maybe that is an element that we just need to park last season and leave it there. But I think it is a reference point of the levels that this group can reach. So all of that is a little bit concerning, isn't it? And I think, of course, Paddy's right. We can look at it and go, it's game two. There's 44 to go. Pace yourself. It's a long way to go. But equally, I think if you get beat 3-0 as comprehensively as Norwich City have done today, whether it's game two, whether it's game 24, whether it's game 43, there's always going to be concern about that.
There is, yeah, particularly when the standards set by Clermont are so high, and, you know, the demands that he places on his players. And this is not, you know, a huge sea change in terms of the squad that they had last season, that know what he wants and what he expects and why they've turned up there. It's just a place where you've got to be bang at it from minute one, and they just weren't at all today, for whatever reason it was. And they've got to look at themselves tonight in the mirror and do the work in the coming days to try and change that and almost get a reaction, because I think we've seen in the past maybe Norwich teams that have had slow starts and struggles. I think of that Leeds 3-0 defeat under Daniel Farke, and there were some pretty grim results in that early patch of the sort of season, and they almost used that as fuel and motivation, and they managed to get maybe a moment at Portman Road, and that kicked them on and propelled them on. And from there on, it was a very different story. So Norwich kind of need to try and find that, I think, in the coming days, whether that starts in the cup, and maybe there's a couple of players there that come to the fore and say, look, you know, we've arrived and we're going to be part of this if others aren't going to, reach the marks that maybe they did set last year. But I don't really think there's as many excuses even as what they had under Clermont when he first inherited them, in terms of the injuries and, you know, the lack of confidence. That really should not be there. It should be a group that's, yeah, I think maybe the expectation around them this season is different, and whether that's kind of a factor, maybe they do go into games believing now that they are less of the underdogs than what they were at sort of maybe different points last season. But yeah, I think under Clermont, that performance for me did come as a huge surprise, as much as it was a difficult place and I expect it to be a tough assignment. I didn't think it was going to be an easy one where Norwich would go there and steamroll them over, but I thought they would be competitive at least. And if they'd have come out narrowly on the wrong side, and, you know, you lose by the odd goal, but you've given a really good account of yourselves, and then I think maybe it's viewed a little bit differently, because at this stage of the season, I think you probably do read more into the performances than the results, just purely on the basis of what we saw last season. We touched on it a little bit last week in terms of under Liam Manning. It never felt sustainable, even those results they did get that were semi-positive at the start of the campaign. You know, you factor in the Coventry result or the Blackburn game or Portsmouth, where they were hanging on by sort of a thread, and, you know, you're sort of just waiting for the goal to go in for the opposition, and somehow Norwich managed to keep it out. I think that performance, really, if that would have been in one of those early games last season, it wouldn't have looked out of place, which is a huge concern.
Yes, it is indeed. I mean, and Paddy, you referenced it there in terms of, I guess, the way that they played and performed. And again, we have to acknowledge Millwall are very good. Millwall could go on and be champions this season. That's the stage of the season that we're at. You don't know how good teams are relative to the rest of the division. But it is, again, a team, from Norwich's perspective, that has aspirations of being in the top eight this season, of being a playoff contending team. Millwall may well end up being a team that they need to get past in the playoffs. And that's the concern, isn't it? That game two, or wherever, whenever it is, and of course, because it's game two, you have to apply a degree of balance to it. And we'll come on to kind of putting it into perspective in a moment. But it will be the gap between the teams, I think, that probably sits quite uncomfortably with Norwich fans as they reflect on this one in the days ahead. Because Adam's right, at this stage, results are something at the end at this stage of the season. I mean, you mentioned that Leeds 3-0, for example. I thought Norwich played quite well that day in 18-19. So sometimes you can kind of forgive individual games like this. But for me, it's that performance and the chasm between the two teams that I think will concern, well, maybe should concern everyone of a Norwich City persuasion.
Yeah, I mean, I just go back to the basic elements, really. The Millwall lad who came in and did his post-match, he said that there's a real, and it might be fueled through the disappointment of, epic disappointment of missing out in the playoffs, but he said there's a real hunger about their group. I didn't see any hunger in that Norwich performance. It just felt entitled. It's like, we'll just turn up here. We rolled you over on Easter Monday. You're not better than us. We will prevail here, and we won't really have to go through too many gears. And all flows back to, you know, Clement. I mean, he was very good post-match, very good. If you've not had a chance, you know, get onto our channels and consume that post-match. Very calm, very composed. I wouldn't say there was any anger, or, you know, whether he's internalised that or whether that's been saved for his players or will be in the coming days. But very analytical how he broke it down, and you couldn't fault it. It does feel like maybe this group, and, you know, you can question why two games into a season they need a wake-up call, but if they do need one, then this should act as, and you would hope it would act. I mean, I tried to say to him, well, the good thing is you know there's a lot of leaders in this group who reacted when they had to, when you first came in the building, in terms of found something within to, you know, project a different face and get that club up and away from relegation danger. And again, he went with that's gone. That's last season. The lines underneath that, anything that happened, good or bad, last season is almost irrelevant. I don't think I should necessarily share that view, but he's right that it's a reset. The counter is reset. What they did do in terms of the second half last season will not get them any points moving forward. So, you know, it's worrying that we're talking around traits that we thought that was a thing was associated with the previous regime, because if they're still there, then let's see if Clement's any better at sort of getting to a point where, whether it's changing up personnel, whether it's, you know, maybe getting the stick out as opposed to the carrot in terms of his man management. But something needs to spark. It's like they're in a bit of a comfort zone, and I don't understand why that feels like it's settled over this group of players. That
have they relaxed, do you think? Because maybe, if you think about what it was last season, there was a necessity.
Backs against the wall,
they had to win. They had to get themselves out of it. And then you get yourself on a roll.
Could be.
Now there's not that pressure in the same sense, even though there's probably expectation, but that's a different thing to manage.
And the way Clement is so analytical, I'm sure that the psychology of it will be in the days ahead. He will cover all the bases. So, you know, that's something I'm sure they will look at. We know that he's constantly wanting this feedback and these daily questionnaires, and not just from a physiological point of view, how players are feeling, but, you know, how they're feeling in terms of internally, you know, in terms of their mind. And there just needs to be a lot of honesty. And you hope the culture that, you know, we heard was there and was evident, you know, over the back end of last season, that very honest, the story is what matters, not what individuals feel or whether they feel like they're contributing as much as they'd like to the story. It's actually the story. It's the bigger collective end goal that they're all trying to, you know, pull in the same direction. You would hope that would allow them to, you know, be very honest with themselves behind closed doors and realise that they're nowhere near the levels they produced in the best moments in the Clement second part of last season. And the good thing is, I guess, is we're game two of a 46-game plus if they get in the playoff season. So there's absolutely no need to be worrying that, you know, the rot has set in or anything. But equally, if they do need a wake up call, then you hope it has been delivered in that 90 minutes at the Den today, and you know, starting with Cardiff, there's a far more committed sense of, go back to what the Millwall lads are showing, hunger. Let's see some hunger from this group of players. You know, they want to get to the Premier League, surely. They're not going to get there if they don't, you know, play with the same intensity and the same it's now or never, boys, approach that characterised that first sort of 6 months of this calendar year, second part of last season under Clement, when, yeah, maybe out of necessity, they drove themselves to levels they probably didn't know or certainly hadn't produced up to that point. Well, to get to where they want to go to this season, which is the right end of the table, not the wrong end, the same attributes, we need to see it. And then overlaying with that is hopefully the quality that we know they have and the quality that they brought in the summer. But it just feels like a little bit like there's a lot of pieces of the jigsaw at the minute, and Clement is not as yet able to slot them into place as he did so brilliantly in very short order when he came in November 2025.
Yeah, and Adam, I guess to end part one, I mean, Paddy kind of alluded to it earlier, there will be people looking at team selections, decisions made over the course of the game. Paddy listed a few of them. I almost felt, it, and maybe this is with hindsight, but looking at it now, it feels to me almost like that team selection had a degree of kind of, it was over for a little bit in terms of maybe thinking too much about what happened in that game in April. Sam Field coming in, and I kind of get the logic in terms of physicality and you want security, and that feels also a little bit to me kind of worrying a bit about what Millwall are going to do. And every time you kind of speak to Philippe Clement about preparation and opposition, it's always about trying to insert Norwich onto the opponent. That felt a little bit backwards to me. I think increasingly the Harry Darling Rue McConville debate is going to come back into focus now as well, because I don't think it's been the best. He had a good pre-season, but I still don't know whether it was a good enough pre-season to maybe dislodge Rue McConville and break up what was a very good partnership towards the back end of last season. Changes at half-time, I take Paddy's point, and you know, when I played at a very low level, but sometimes you would have a bad performance like that and you needed a reset and you needed to be shouted at and given 10 minutes to go. And sometimes that does have the desired response. I never really felt like that was going to happen today because of just how far gone it was in that first half. I think it did need personnel changes. So kind of named three, maybe even four things there that happened. And it was 2-0 by the time the first substitutions were made. As Paddy says, it's probably the first time I've looked at it and felt it was all a little bit reactive. And I don't know, maybe a little bit of just felt like a bit of an overthink and almost thinking too much about what various pieces needed to slot in. What did you make of all of those decisions?
Yeah, I'd agree with that assessment. You know, Pelle Mattsson, I don't think it was his finest hour last week against West Brom. Probably, in my eyes, one of, if not his worst performance under Philippe Clement. He just didn't look at the races. And I think, you know, a few people on the Q&A earlier in the week were sort of asking my opinion whether that was, is he still carrying a little bit of that knock in his hip that, you know, kept him out of the penultimate pre-season game. But under Philippe Clement, you know, I don't think he'd be risking players if they weren't at a position where they could go and compete, and you know, 100%, because Norwich have been there far too often where they have thrown players in where maybe they shouldn't have done, and that's cost them. So I don't think that would have been the case. And that environment, you know, Mattsson pulled up with the goal in April, and his performance in that game, I remember being pretty good away at Millwall. So I don't think there was even a necessity there to maybe even make that change in the centre of the park. Darling, yeah, has struggled a little bit in the first few games, and I thought he was very poor last weekend. And McConville, you know, he was excellent in that second half of last campaign, and him and Cordoba, you know, you look at the sort of goals against record and they were up there in terms of the sort of right end of the table in terms of goal concessions in the second half of last season as a pairing. So for those purposes, really, it does feel like that maybe is a need to go back to that. I think there's other areas as well. Anas Ben Slimani is another one that I feel, look at his goals, assist output now, and you sort of contrast that maybe to that purple patch he had in early January and February. And
yeah, sorry to jump out. And all I was going to add is that I kind of feel he's in the realm that unless he scores, he can often go through games and you sort of forget he's there. It kind of floats around a little bit. I'd like to see a bit more impact from him in time of open. But I think he presses very well, but it's the question then of the trade-off of, does he offer enough on the ball and from an attacking sense? And some of that stuff that Paddy said earlier, where you're trying to play through a team, yeah, because in the end, I think it wasn't just him. It was the way they played and the way they were pressed generally. But I think there's always that temptation with Torre if you want to go in behind very quickly. And actually, you know, if you've got someone like Magoma there, I think it's easy, and maybe even Schwartau, and this is what he needs to become for me. Yeah. That option then to play through teams maybe slightly more.
Yeah, and I think maybe today I'd have been more tempted. I know they're lacking options at the moment, unfortunately, in the wider areas, which is, you know, a bit of a problem, although they did have some on the bench today that came on and I thought did have a positive impact. Maybe that's where I see Schwartau moving forward, just in that number 10. He said to me that that's a position he wants to play in, and I think Clement referenced it as well at the back end of last season, that that's where the club see him, and just that athleticism he brings in sort of centre of the park there, I think is something I want to see a little bit more of. And yeah, maybe when they get a few players back, that might give him an opportunity to go and play in there and see what he can produce. Because, yeah, I felt today Slimani was pretty anonymous generally, as were most of them really, in terms of the attacking areas. That, you know, I'm not going to pit it all at his door, and Torre as well. You know, I think there's a lot of areas there that still need to be worked on. I think when Makama comes back in and he's fully fit and firing, then he just gives you a lot more. He's all-rounded sort of play is more influential maybe than what Torre's is, I think. You know, I know Torre grabbed all the goals in the sort of second half of last season, but yeah, he's not had the same level of impact so far this term, apart from that goal, of course, against MK Dons very early on at the start of the season. So, yeah, plenty of question marks there, I think. You know, maybe when they get some players back, some of those will become less problematic. But yeah, in the here and now, I think Clement's probably got to take a little bit of the can for today, just in terms of that selection.
Yes, right, part two. I still feel like there's plenty more to discuss and get into, and of course to look ahead to that Tuesday night trip to Cardiff, which feels like in these circumstances it's now taken on extra meaning. See you in a second. Welcome back to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, a dissection after a den disaster for the Canaries. This Saturday lunchtime, a 3-0 mauling by Alex Neil's Lions, which maybe served as somewhat of a reality check against a backdrop of high expectations and plenty of optimism for Philippe Clement's men heading into the new campaign. Paddy, we ended that half speaking about choices and decisions that Philippe Clement has made. We're going to go on to Cardiff, which maybe feels more apt in terms of the what next element of it, but feels to me like a big spotlight now is going to be placed on that central defensive pairing. Obviously, Jose Cordoba we have to take out of the mix for Tuesday after his red card today. Does it now feel inevitable that Rory McConville comes back in for Burnley next weekend?
Yeah, I think so. I think over the two games we've seen in the league, and this isn't a let's pile on Harry Darling, but you know, as a pair, who were the best pair at Clement's disposal in the centre of his defence, and the body of evidence from this calendar year onwards, I think they came together actually at New Year's Day, the QPR away win. I think that was the first time he stuck Cordoba and McConville together, certainly from the start, and you know, they anchored a win that day, and they didn't look back. And it was only injury really that intervened to, you know, deny Cordoba, McConville, that kind of. There was a spell there where he was never present, wasn't he? I think he was the only one. I think he played pretty much because he played after the Birmingham game.
Yeah.
And I just think as a defender in terms of, you know, his the dynamism he can offer in terms of 1v1. I just think his reading of the game, his comfort on the ball, and crucially, you know, how he dovetails with Cordoba's own game and the attributes that the two of them have seemed to blend together much better than any other pairing. So, yeah, I think that has to happen, really, because it then gives you that focal point for your defence, and then you've obviously, you know, hopefully then you can work with your two fullbacks and Kovacevic behind them and just give Norwich as a collective that solid platform now, because that's, you know, two goals against West Brom and three goals here today, and it could have been a lot more than three. And if you're leaking five every two championship games, then you're not going to do anything in this division. And that isn't obviously to throw defenders under the proverbial, but equally, you know, if you've got that solid base, then it makes everything else structurally a lot more straightforward to unpick. And so, yeah, for me, I think that has to happen, because Norwich look a better team when Cordoba is partnered by McConville.
Is there a point, I mean, we've kind of spent a little bit of time there, Adam, speaking about them defensively. Is there an attacking element to this as well? Because I think in these two games, I thought the performance against West Brom was good enough to get something out of the game, and it probably, we're not going to go down that rabbit hole again, but if circumstances were different, they maybe would have a point. And then, I don't know, maybe the complexion does or doesn't feel different. I don't think it necessarily does after today's performance, but I look at now across 180 minutes of Championship football, very, very small sample size. Doesn't really feel to me like Norwich have created anything that you would deem to be massively clear-cut so far.
No, very few. Can't really register anything bar the goal they actually did score last weekend, which, you know, came as a consolation, and it wasn't exactly a well-worked, you know, well-crafted goal. It was a bit of a sort of scuffed shot from right that ends up falling on the line for Chris Gorham to head home. So, yeah, that has got a bit of a concern, I think, particularly when you consider some of the attacking football we saw in the tail end of last season and sort of the fluidity. And it isn't really a huge change of players. If anything, they've strengthened the right-hand side in Andre Brooks, or should have done in terms of the fee and, you know, what he produced last season at Sheffield United, which is why Norwich were so keen to bring him in. They've got so many options in that number 10. I know Magoma was missing today, but players there that you feel like have got the capabilities to create, to score goals, because they all done it last season. They've obviously got additions now on the left-hand side as well. It's, you know, a shame maybe with the Ahmed news that he wasn't available to play, because I think, you know, he contributed 7 goal contributions when he arrived last year, and losing him is a bit of a blow. But yeah, maybe it's Torre as well. Just, you know, I think maybe the sort of purple patch that he had when he first arrived, I think we spoke about it quite a lot with Ewan as well. Maybe it's going to be a different challenge for him this season in terms of Championship sides are going to know a bit more about his game. Not saying that teams wouldn't know him about him anyway, because they have, you know, so many analysts now and everybody working behind the scenes. But yeah, he's just not quite getting in the sort of same levels of positions maybe to score like he was last season. So yeah, there's stuff to be worked on there. I think the positives are you've now got additions on the left-hand side, and I thought, yeah, Diallo today was very good when he came on. I know it was, you know, almost a bit of a dead rubber game at that point, because it was game over, it was 2-0. You know, maybe if Norwich would have got one, they could have changed the sort of, yeah, outlook of the game. But given they were down to 10 men and the way that game had flowed, it felt very unlikely. But he did offer them something different, which they didn't really have today in terms of the attacking element. So with him and then Masaba hopefully getting up to speed as well, maybe that will be what they need, just some pace on the sort of flanks, which I think Svartal's very limited when he plays out there. We spoke about that before, and it's not his best position. So it's good to have those boys available, and maybe they'll get minutes in the week and push their claims for next weekend.
I'm a big Oscar Svartal fan, as everyone knows, I think, but I've not really been that impressed with him since the start of pre-season, to be honest. Maybe it is, like you say, positionally. And look, it was not a day where there was many redeeming features, Pad. I think that's fair to say. But if there was even the dimmest flicker of light, it probably was the two that Adam referenced there, Papamoudou Diallo and Anthony Masaba from the bench, albeit game was done, easy to come on and play when you're 2-0, 3-0 down. But there were some positive signs from those two that I guess you would look for moving forward.
Yeah, and to be fair, Diallo, when he came on against West Brom, there was one where he went on the outside and it felt natural him going on the outside, in contrast to maybe a Schwartz, Mahomo, they want to come inside. And I think it might have been his cross, actually, that led to, if not the goal, it was a good chance for Wright, I think. But yeah, he needs to come in now. I think he needs to come in because he does have that drive and dynamism and energy. You feel when he gets the ball, defenders immediately are on the back foot. And not seeing enough of Brooks today. Like I said, referenced earlier, that was a very good chance he had. There was one or two of the moments he put that ball across, although you said afterwards the system had flagged when Schwartau kind of almost lost his bearings a little bit and the ball squirmed wide in the near post. But that came from a Brooks dart. So, but again, you know, we're sort of talking in terms of isolated players, isolated pockets of the pitch. But if the collective isn't cohesive and they don't have that structure correct, and the defence are offering that platform, and then the two centre mids, you know, picking the ball up and able to sort of connect the dots, as it were, it is going to feel fitful and sporadic. And you know, we can talk about moving pieces around on the chessboard, but actually, I think the overall needs to be better than it has been on the ball in these first two league games. And you know, that's probably more to do than just identifying one or two players who could come out and other ones who could go in. Yeah, you could do that, but I just think they have to be better as a whole, really. I mean, the amount of times today, and it, well, again, it made me feel it was a throwback to the Manning era, where Kovacevic is painting by numbers almost, and the two centre backs have split, and you know Millwall have just pressed high, and they've pushed three or four players up, and Norwich are not able to, you know, get out of their own third, as it were, and then you just end up propensity to go long, and the ball's coming straight back. That was the structural issues that we were seeing too often before Clement took over. So why there was a regression today, I don't know, whether it was just purely the pressure that Millwall put them under. But for me, there's yes, on one level, there's personnel who could come out and switch it up. But equally, I think they need to be better structurally now as well than they have been in these first two games, because they're a bit too easy to nullify and too easy to play against. And that's a combination that doesn't get you anywhere in this league.
Yeah, and I think you said it best earlier, and I agree. Today, the moments, and there were very, very few of them, that they looked like they were capable of going and creating something, was when they played through a team, not when they got forced. And I think this was to do with the way that Millwall pressed, in fairness. And actually, it's probably a different podcast entirely, but I really like the intensity that Alex Neil has added to his team. So I don't really recall... his Norwich team played with quite a bit of intensity, particularly when he first came in, but don't remember them ever quite being as intense. So that feels like he's added that. But what it is, it forced them long. And actually, the moments where they were better is when they played through it. And there were times where I felt Sam Field, even Kenny McLean at points, weren't brave enough in possession to go and play. Yeah.
To go back to what I said at the start, that is what Clement effectively accused that group today of, not being brave enough on the ball over the piece. Yeah, they did it in sporadic moments. But now, is that lack of bravery because there's a lack of confidence, lack of self-belief in this group? You know, are they physically not able to go with a team at that high intensity as Millwall were today? I don't know. These are elements the head coach has to get to the bottom of, because there was no lack of bravery second part of last season, when that was a far more difficult circumstance to be trying to play through and trying to pin teams back because they had their backs against the wall. And as Clement, we were at that event midweek, again, made reference to, it was only January when they actually climbed out of the bottom three. But even by then, you could see that structurally they were starting to be far more willing to sort of, you know, get the ball down and try and pick a way through teams, rather than just this, you know, kind of hit and hope style option, which, to be fair, you know, you look at Millwall and it just underlines, you know, there isn't a one size fits all. That Millwall are very happy to go long and try and play off the big lad Coburn, and then you have those very quick wide players picking up the bits and pieces and just pressure, wave after wave after wave. And today Norwich were not able to resist that, and you know, that's why I think Clement will, when he gets home tonight, he'll probably won't have much of a good night's sleep, because there's so many things wrong with that group at the moment, and it's his responsibility to unpick it all and put it back together again.
If you think about, and if we keep going on about last season, but you've got to reference it in terms of where Norwich City got to and the levels they got to. They were so good because they could do both facets of it. There were times where Millwall away, actually, in that second half, is a really good example. They became quite transitional and they were happy to do that, and they could soak up pressure and they could play without the ball. There were times where they were happy to have high percentage of the ball and they could pick their way through teams and kind of unlock doors, so to speak. I know there were a couple of examples where they struggled against low blocks, but consistently they were able to do that facet as well. They could play through teams, they could play round teams, they could play over teams when they needed to be. And it's felt like to me in the first two games, and I don't want to blame Torre for this because I don't think it's his fault, but I think it is Norwich are getting the ball in deep areas and they're just trying to hit the ball over the top because they know he's got pace, and if you do it early you get him in, and you can understand the logic of that. But when you're doing it every single time, it becomes repeatable for one, and teams just drop off and they're happy to get tight to Touré and engage him physically. And you know, Adam, you referenced it earlier, and I'd agree. I think those technical abilities, that back to goal play that you kind of associate, just isn't quite there. Which is why, yeah, I think they look better when they actually play through. And that's something I think they need to get back to. And then it's about, can you play him in at the right time rather than every time, which is kind of where it felt like, particularly in the first half, it got to. Look, Adam, we've spoken about this result and the concerning nature of the performance, and it was. It is game two in a 44-game season. It's a long, long way to go. And I think I kind of put this to Ben Crisene a little bit. It is easy to get caught up in the poor performance. Everything's on fire. It's all disastrous. It isn't. That's not true. And of course, some of the discourse and some of the reaction will be burnt slightly by what happened at the beginning of last season. But equally, again, it's not a time to just assume that everything's going to be okay because it's game two. So you probably have to strike a balance and find somewhere in the middle where, as I think hopefully we've done, there's stuff that they absolutely need to improve. But equally, you know, the whole of the world isn't caving in just on the basis of today's game in isolation.
Absolutely not. And I think there's a lot of teams, and we've seen it maybe with Norwich as well in recent times, where you don't get off necessarily to the best start, but over the piece, you know, you grow into it and you hit form at the right time and you start churning out results week in, week out, particularly when you get to the stage of the season, which we'll soon be getting to, where it's three game weeks and the points can really rack up. If you can have a perfect week and get 9 points, that can take you from the bottom end to the top end very quickly in this league. And Norwich almost done that jump under Clermont. You know, you take over New Year and sort of getting out of the bottom three from there on. They just kept going through the table, up the rankings, to the point where there was almost belief at one stage they could gate crash the top six, which you know, felt so far away. If you'd have said that to anybody, probably even in early January, mid-January, late January, whenever it might have been. So it can change. And I don't think anyone should sort of lose all that optimism we had at sort of the summertime, because there's plenty of good work there. I think they've still got the right people in the right places. They've got talented footballers. They've got players to come back in as well. So it's not all doom and gloom, albeit they have got a very difficult run of games. I think now on paper, plenty of away trips in there as well. I think, is it three away games maybe in the next four? And there's some tough ones in there as well. You know, I sort of don't think you can dismiss difficult assignment somewhere like Stoke or somewhere like Sheffield United, where you're going to face a lot of the elements you face today in terms of physicality and teams that will try and sort of get off on the right foot and sort of be in your face straight away. So Norwich can have to be better at dealing with that, but they've got the quality, I think, across the piece to be good enough. They've got a head coach who has proven it already in the second half of last season. Now it's about sort of trying to get those elements back, going back to basics, like you said, and it's just trying to get confidence, I think. And once they get one result, hopefully that will be the springboard to take them on. So, yeah, I don't think it's a massive write-off. Even teams like Ipswich last season, I remember not getting off to the best of starts. And I know maybe they had different kind of expectations in terms of coming out of the Premier League and kind of what that brings. But, yeah, you can't kind of judge everything on the first couple of games. Maybe 10, 15 games down the track, if it's not quite going to plan, then maybe then it's a bit more, it's on fire and there's a few more concerns.
Yes, and please stop looking at league tables after two games, please. I don't want to hear anything about how Norwich is second from bottom. There's been two games played. League tables shouldn't even exist until there's five games. I'm going off, Seb. I'm going to end up naming 71 countries if I'm not careful. Paddy, just to, I guess, kind of close the page on today, and then we'll move ahead and look at Cardiff. How worried are you about what you saw today in isolation of all of those things that we've spoken about, with obviously the fact it is hurdle two of 46 in what is a very long marathon?
It's certainly not what we were hoping for in terms of, you know, when they walked out against West Brom at 5-3 or whatever it was Saturday week ago. So, but worried? No, because, you know, ultimately, at the helm is a very, very good head coach who's, I'm sure, faced this and far worse. I mean, go back to November 2025, that was a far more difficult situation he walked into at Carrow Road, and the sure-footed nature he navigated a path through that would lead you to think that he will unpick the evident issues that are there at the moment. And there's a bit of a balancing act going on. You know, he's got new players to integrate. He's got players who've been injured for a long period of time, Papa Jallo, Antti Cernach. He's got to feed them back into the system. He's got to improve the other rump of a squad that he inherited and then worked with so well for 6-7 months. You know, there's a lot to overlay there, and maybe it is unrealistic to think that they would carry on where they left off at the back end of last season, because there are different variables in play. And as he said to us on Friday, you know, it'll probably be October, November, and that flows into what you said there, just said, Connor, about, you know, maybe give it a period of time without looking at league tables to actually definitively judge what this season could hold, because it might take a little while yet to get past that integration phase, be it new players, be it injured players, and then we'll see. And then hopefully there's as happened over the second part of last season, a real settled look emerges because players are coming in, performing at a consistent level, at a high level, that's generating results, and it feels almost seamless then, and it's almost micromanaging from Clermont's point of view. Right now it feels that he's got to do a lot of heavy lifting, but nothing more onerous than what he faced when he first walked through the door, and he found the solutions there. So I'm very confident that he will get it right, and you know, hopefully that'll be sooner rather than later, but it might not be. It might be there's a few more uncomfortable early links in the chain until we get to, you know, October, November time, and then things start to move forward again in positive fashion. And to take Adam's point, you know, it's very easy to accelerate when you've got blocks of games coming thick and fast, if you've got all the elements in place, and then you're just rolling that momentum up and up and up. And then, you know, as they proved, they went from below the waterline to the cusp of the playoffs. So, you know, it can be done. And so there's no worries, I don't think, in that regard, in the bigger picture regard. But, you know, maybe a concern or two, I think it's safe to say, magnified by the limpness of that performance today against a very good Millwall team.
Yep, I think that is where I am on it as well. Actually, I'll go further. Ban league tables until game five. I don't think any should exist. And nice segue that, Adam, I think, in terms of looking ahead to what is to come, which is a regionalised trip to Cardiff in the Carabao Cup second round. Does it take? I mean, Paddy put this to Clement after the game. He was of the view it does take new meaning. So what? I'm going to put you in his shoes and in his. I don't know what shoes he's wearing, but they're often very nice shoes that he does wear. Not quite white chinos. They haven't made a return as of yet. What do you do now with the team in the Welsh capital on Tuesday night?
I think you've kind of got to have a view of what sort of team you may be looking at for the following Saturday against Burnley. Almost a trial run, really, I guess. Clearly going to be some rotation there as well, because there's players there that need minutes. And I think some of those that were pretty evident who came off the bench today, you know, the likes of Diallo, if they can try and accelerate him and get him his first start and some serious minutes in the bank, then that will help him moving forward. Because as much as, you know, he's had minutes off the bench, it's kind of different having those short, sharp bursts to actually start in a game. And that will maybe give him a little bit of a better view of him and maybe where he's at in terms of kind of starting games and whether that's viable at the moment. I think there's, centre-back's clearly going to be an interesting one. McConville, you'd expect to come back in, given Cordoba will be suspended for that one. And whether he goes with Darling, whether he looks at someone like Alves, he obviously wasn't in the squad today, to try and get him and some sort of first minutes in English football, that's intriguing. Pelle Mattsson, do you go with him? You know, given that he started Sam Field today to kind of get him maybe into a bit of a rhythm, given that he hasn't quite kicked on so far this season, you know, given that he wasn't very good last weekend and came on today off the bench. So do you go down that route? It's an interesting one. I am intrigued to see kind of how he goes with it, because clearly the MK Dons game in the first game was kind of a different start to the season in the sense that it was a cup game and it did sort of open up the campaign. And you almost viewed that, I think, as kind of the penultimate or final pre-season friendly to a degree, even though it was a cup game competitive, where this is now game four of the season, and you have got a big game against Burnley next weekend, which is not going to be easy, because I did watch a little of the game the other day and they look a very serious side. So it's intriguing. I'm interested to see when the team news drops at quarter six, whatever it will be, on Tuesday night in Cardiff, who he goes with.
Paddy, how would you play it, do you think, if you're in his shoes? There clearly is, Adam said, a need probably to give players minutes who need them. You mentioned Bruno Alves, Darlan Yongwa, I suspect would be one as well. But get the sense, listening to him today when you put that question to him, that there might be now a willingness to almost shake it out of those players by giving them another opportunity to play again on Tuesday night?
Maybe, in some regards. I'm sure that will be the case. Yongwa definitely has to play for me, because I thought Krasany wasn't at his best today, and I thought he was okay actually against West Brom and had been through pre-season, but collectively today I don't think he was quite there. I mean, that second goal, the big lad Cooper has just beasted him in the air, as he probably should do, but nevertheless it was too easy, that led to the second goal. So, and the amount of times they got cut open, and it wasn't just a reflection on him, but they were far too open down his flank as well for a lot of the parts of that game. So I'd make a change there. McConville will obviously come in. Jacob Wright's the one for me. I would really like to see him start a game in Cardiff. And
deeper, higher?
Probably in the two, with Mattsson, I think. Give Kenny a bit of a breather, because he's going to need to do a lot of heavy lifting, particularly in terms of leadership, I think, in the weeks ahead. So, he's knocking at the door now, Jacob Wright. And nobody else is really going out and grasping the game in that area of the pitch so far this season. So, I wouldn't be averse to that at all. And for me, Slimani has to come out of it, and I'd give Schwartau a go in the 10, I think, because it's obviously, yes, it's Cardiff and it's a League Cup in midweek, but there's a bigger picture in play now and an imperative to get the league points ticking over. So Slimani isn't really doing it. Sounds like Mahoma's not going to be available this coming week, minimum, with a calf issue that kept him out today. What's to be lost? The drive and the running power of a Schwartau in there, particularly if you had Wright, you know, pulling the strings just behind him as well. And then that leads itself maybe for me to, you know, I don't know if you'd go Jallo or Masaba or the other way around, but maybe, you know, give them a good block of time each on the left. And Wright's an interesting one. I'd play Andre Brooks again, because I think he is going to be such an important figure. And
not seeing that.
No, not from the start, I don't think. I don't think they're likely to go that route. Not when he's been out for 10 months. I think he certainly should be on the bench, and if the game allows it, get him on for a period of time. But a start, I think, feels a little bit too, particularly the way he was talking and Philippe again talking about, you know, you've just got to manage him very cautiously, almost at the 11th hour of this recovery that they've been on now. I think it's imperative Brooks starts to feel comfortable and regular game time. There's another player whose season last season was disrupted by injury, so he needs now game time to get himself into a rhythm, get up to speed. So I'd be probably looking to put him in, and not too many other options, is there, at the top of the pitch? It's either Torre, it's Chris Gordon, isn't it? So I think, again, bigger picture, you probably want Mo to have another line out, and hopefully he can get himself on the score sheet. And we know how he feels like he's a confidence player, and that might, you know, then have a positive impact for the championship games ahead. So, but of the ones we've discussed, Wright is the one I'd like to see, you know, get serious game time on Tuesday, because I just think the previous point we were discussing about, you know, being able to move through the thirds and sort of control the tempo of a game, I think he's still probably the best they've got in those central midfield positions. And it feels like he's listened to what Clement has clearly wanted to drill into him, the aggressiveness and the snappy elements to his work out of possession. I think you've seen that in pre-season evidence that he's added those attributes. So yeah, in the absence of any other central midfielders really getting hold of these games early on in the season, what's to be lost from giving him a run out, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. I would like to see him. I think it probably does need to be a blend now, doesn't it, in terms of the way that they approach it. Dare we finish the podcast on VAR? I think it probably feels like we do have to go there, I think, after Philippe's rant on Friday, which I recognise in light of today maybe hasn't aged as well. I mean, I wasn't in the room. You boys were. I've certainly not encountered something like that before. What did you make of it, Adam? It's a funny old thing, isn't it? Because it is something that there is such a big feeling towards from an anti-sense in terms of the fans, I recognise, or I feel, and that seems to be the case across football. And yet in the game, you can kind of understand why, when everything is so heightened with coaches' jobs and points and the money in the game and what 1 point, 2 points can do for a team for a season, you can understand why there's the view on the opposite side that coaches have and that players have of why actually that accuracy and that almost scientific nature of it is a necessity. And that's a split that I can't really think happens with anything else in the game, really.
No, and I think we know we spoke about a lot of it last week, but I've always been of the opinion I don't want to see VAR in sort of a setting in the Championship. I like the sort of to and fro of it, and the fact that when the ball hits the back of the net, there's instantly celebration. You know it's a goal and it stands. And I'd rather take last week over having VAR and, you know, Norwich have maybe moments themselves which go in their favour, whether it be tight offsides or whatever. And maybe that jubilation and excitement you get with a 90th minute winner gets chalked off, because we've been there, we've seen it in the Premier League ourselves with Norwich, and it's not always the most enjoyable experience when you get a 5-6 minute delay. But I can completely understand from Clement's point of view and get why he's always been very pro VAR. I know there's been a few sort of comments from sort of Southampton fans and West Brom fans saying, well, you know, did he sort of want VAR when the McCarma goal goes in last time against Southampton last season? But he, you know, remained very pro VAR even at that stance, you know. And I think when you're that sort of clear on it, And he certainly didn't hold back yesterday in the press conference in terms of his views on it either. And I thought he made some fair points across the piece as well. And I think some of the better stuff actually came after his 71 Nations rant, which was very interesting to say the least. I know when I saw the piece of paper he walked in with, I thought, oh God, here we go, not another injury crisis. but then, when he starts reeling off the first few countries and he's with A and then he start moving to B, I thought, okay, we're going the whole way down the list here. And I did start to try to type them, and at that point I was like, I've got no hope here because there's going to be quite a few. Didn't realise there was going to be 71, and I think a few people have picked up he's missed out on a few as well. I think Welsh football's now got VAR, and there's a few other countries as well. So whichever analyst wrote down that list maybe needs to do a little bit more research to find a few more. But in the here and now, it's not going to change. Ultimately, they're not going to bring it in, I don't think, the midway through a season. So they're just going to have to get on with it for between now and the end of the season. And hopefully, if Norwich are better than they are or were today, and maybe even last week, then, and take their chances, then, I think maybe the VAR debate will go to sort of die a death a little bit more just for the here and now.
Yes, I feel like it probably won't be the last time we are speaking about officials or VAR, unfortunately. That probably brings us to a close for this week. The boys will be making the trip to Cardiff. It's I say sadly, but it's not going to be one that I'm making. I would actually genuinely rather be there. I'm not doing anything exciting. I wish you guys well. I hope it's a good one. I hope it's a winning one.
You'll have to let us know what you will be doing. You've teed that one up.
Well, all I'll be doing is running after my 6-year-old. It's summer holidays, and this is my week of childcare. So that's about as boring as it's got. I'll be watching it on TV. I'm sure with plenty of others as well. So I am intrigued to see how it goes and how it unfolds. That probably leaves us. Thanks to Adam. Thanks to Paddy. And thank you to all of our listeners, whether you're in Argentina, Albania, Armenia, Bolivia. I'm trying to think of other countries.
You've missed out a few A's there.
I was trying to do Antarctica. We thank you very much. We won't go through the whole list.
Ascension Islands.
Wherever you are watching, we appreciate it. And thank you. We'll be back next week after that game against Burnley, where hopefully Norwich City are beginning to head on an upward curve again. Thank you very much for watching and listening. See you for the next one. Bye-bye.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.